Welcome to the Agile Wire, where professional Scrum trainers Jeff Bubbles and Jeff Molesky discuss Agile topics. Now, here are your hosts, Jeff Bubbles and Jeff Molesky.
And we are recording. All right, Mr. Bubbles, kick us off, man.
All right, let's start with the meta level. What's going on with the podcast, Jeff?
Man, again, with the hot potato, you're just like, screw it. You take the conversation and go with it. So I, after much consideration, have decided to take a step back. And well, that's not even accurate. I'm out, like deuces. Like this is my last one. So, you know,
we're gonna pull you back in. This isn't the last one, that maybe last one you're hosting, but not the last time you'll be on the podcast for sure.
Okay, I can compromise there. So, you know, you and I had a conversation, and I think this has kind of been in the works for a while in the back of my head. Like, I knew this after doing some soul searching and thinking about the future of work and all that. I'm just like, this probably isn't the way I want to spend my free time. As much as I enjoy just sitting down and talking with really smart people, I just wanted to take a step back. And I think with the natural progression of you two in particular, for people who are listening, Chad's here as well, and the formation of Wisconsin Agility, and really you two kind of taking your careers together more collectively, I think it's just almost a natural transition for Chad to step in, to take more of the reins and produce more awesome content for people that they want to listen to. So,
yeah, I was going to try to keep my mouth shut as long as possible, but clearly I can't. So I'm excited and scared about the whole transition because, as some of you close to Jeff and I know, like, Jeff Bubbles is always pushing me to do things outside my comfort zone. So this is just another one of those things.
Is it really, like, do you feel like outside of your comfort zone though, doing a podcast?
I mean, I think I always relate it to, like when you have a sporting event and, you know, like when I was in high school, right? Like, I kind of dreaded the time leading up to the event, but then once the game starts, once the race starts, then I love it. Like you get into a focused flow state, and that's how I feel with a lot of things. About the permanence of the internet, I think is my biggest scary thing. Like when you put things out there, it's out there forever, and we didn't have that as much, I guess, when we were all growing up. So I'm just aware of it, I guess, and so. There's always a little bit of like anxiety. That's probably what it is. But like you were kind of commenting earlier, like once you put a quarter in the slot, like I will just talk. I think one of the things that worries me is that sharing talk time as two hosts is a challenge. And you guys have done it so well over the years now, years plural, right? The Agile Wire has been rocking it for years. But just that piece, I guess.
How do you guys manage that when you're co-teaching?
We found a good balance of like how we do things. Like I always run the screens and share my screen, and usually I kick things off. And so like Chad can like just go on a sort of soapbox, and I'll let him go, and I can usually see where he's going to try to go in certain areas and like direct. But I don't know. We found a good balance there where like if I'm guiding it, then I can leave space for him, or you know. And not go on rants. And if we do go, then we message each other back and forth. You know, we have iMessage up over here on the right on one of our screens, and we'll just be like, hey, whatever it might be. So I think we do that at times. But we're conscious of it. I think we have to think about it all the time. It's not something that you can ever shut off. Like, you really do have to think about the people around you, especially when you have the gift of gab and you can just talk, you know?
Yeah, and I would agree. I think it's we have found a good balance in the training environment. So I think it is just knowing when to, because the problem is we'll just yes and each other over and over again. And then you'll look down at the clock and it's like, oh yeah, we were probably supposed to be done with that section like 45 minutes ago. You know, like, and the thing I love about the more you train, the more, or any facilitation, the more you get to that comfort level of like, we're 45 minutes behind, no big deal. Like you know what to trim and where to make up time, and you can still hit all the takeaways. But in the podcast, this is your format is pretty wild as far as like free form, right? Like, I think that's a cool thing that you guys have always done. Like, you pretty much show up, hit record with maybe a loose outline, and then see where it goes. And I mean, I guess a lot of podcasts do that. Maybe it's not that unique, but I've loved the format from day one. So I also feel like I'm that, it's like a rock band that like switches lead singers. And so I, back to the fear, like I'm like the replacement, and I want to do well. So
Jeff set a high bar, you know, like,
yeah, man, you have like, I have to, you know, I got to step in and fill those shoes. So I'm excited though. I'm excited.
I mean, the only bar in my head is my cussing threshold. And like, I don't,
I'm going to clean this podcast up. All right. All right. Now I'm going to get a little crazy. Like, I'm going to grab this thing, you know, grab the reins, and we're going to clean this podcast up, right? We're going to go from, I don't know what rating I'd give you guys. Maybe it's got to be an R because of the occasional F bomb. So I'm going to keep this at least PG-13.
Yeah. Well, that was like, I think I asked you at one point, and it was the response you had given me was because your kids listen to this, and that's just not, you know, language that you want them hearing coming out of your mouth in particular. Like, you don't necessarily care about others, but like, that was something important for you.
Yeah, I don't
mean, that's
about
just the side of parenting I don't have to worry about, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I'm not judging you that much. I actually really enjoy it. But back to that permanence of the internet thing, right? It's like, well, you're putting it out there, and I, you know, it's not like I never swear, but, yeah, thinking about a broader audience. And I'm mostly joking. I'm mostly joking about the cleaning it up. You guys, it's not like it's a raunchy podcast by any means.
I think that's kind of a good transition into the future. But really quick on something you were just hitting on inside of there. Like, I know you two probably listen to more agile focused podcasts than I do. It's sort of fallen off my radar over the years. But every time we have a guest come on, like once we hit the stop button, we have our go-to one question retrospective that we have after everyone. It's always, hey, what's one thing that we could have done to make your experience better with us here today, right? Try and leave it open-ended. And I don't think we've ever heard somebody say, I would have liked questions up front. But we often hear, the guest will say, oh, generally, you know, I get a list of questions that we can go into coming in prepared. But I really like this format. I really like just being able to show up in free form with the conversation. And so I've always appreciated that. And like, as a person who listens to other podcasts, that's the style that I enjoy listening to as well. Mm-hmm. I like the directed, yeah, we're going to have a focused conversation on something that is directly applicable. And then we're going to kind of meander all over the place and just hear different perspectives on things. So I think that's valuable. But, anyway, so we were talking before, like, what does the future now hold for the podcast? What are the things that you've enjoyed about it over the years? What are the things that you would like to change about it moving forward? Thoughts?
So I think the free form that we just talked about and the questions and not having, you know, it being prepared or scripted, that's not changing. That's just who we are. That's how Chad and I even show up, you know, when we're going to do training or we're going to do advising. Like, we don't come in with like some preconceived notions of how we're going to, you know, manipulate something. We have to respond to whatever the environment is. And we're going to do that with whatever guests we have on. So that's going to be the same. And I think that's the most interesting way for things to happen. You know, we always send out in our pre email to our guests, like, this should feel like a group of friends getting together to have a cup of coffee or a couple drinks. Like, that's what we're going to do. Don't feel like you have to go and prepare a presentation for this conversation. Like, it's a conversation. So let it happen. We try to take some of the nerves off of for people by explaining that to them. So I think that's going to definitely remain the same. One thing we will do is the podcast is going to be, we're going to have our first sponsor. It's going to be sponsored by Wisconsin Agility. So Wisconsin Agility, our company, is going to pay for it. So we're just going to say, like, you know, Agile Wire is sponsored by Wisconsin Agility. And we'll probably talk about things that we're doing in Wisconsin Agility. So we can give a little bit more examples. We'll probably tell you about things that we're doing, like if we're speaking at places or we're going others, you know, we're going to have a course here or whatever it might be. Like, we might talk a little bit more about that, because in the past, Chad and I have been kind of doing some stuff, and Jeff, you and I, we're good friends, but we're not like working together tightly. So that didn't quite seem right for me to make all those plugs, but it's not so much about plugs. This is more about information that we'll probably be sharing.
Yeah. And that'll be an interesting change, I guess, right? Like, we've always been very hypersensitive to not promote, and like shove things down people's throats, right? Like, hey, you know, come to our class, do this, right? Like, we've been sensitive to that because we know how it feels when other companies do that to you, right? We've even got feedback from our, like, the meetup that we run in Madison, Wisconsin, right? The capital city of Wisconsin, where we're both Jeff and I are born and raised and, you know, named our company after the state we're in. We've gotten feedback before where, you know, they're like, well, you guys never like plug yourselves. You know, they're like, you guys run this meetup for us. You've been running this meetup for years and you never talk about what you're doing. And like, we said, yeah, we do that deliberately. And they were kind of like, you should stop. You should talk about what you're doing more often, right? You should promote what you do. And so that was interesting feedback, right? Because we always kind of had the idea that we shouldn't do that. And maybe we shouldn't, but we're going to try to balance it, right? We don't want to turn it into just a big advertisement. But yeah, so that's, I guess that's one minor change. Otherwise, I don't know. I want to try to keep as much the same as possible, like we said earlier. Just, you know, have awesome people on, talk about interesting topics, and hopefully people out there find some value in it.
All right. So our topic for the day, we had a nice discussion here about the transition of the podcast, but how about organizations that are trying to transition to being a more agile organization? They create a Skunk Works, an experimentation center, a discovery center. You pick the words that you want to use, but they basically carve out an org within an org. And then they say, go be innovative. Go be responsive and adaptive and create new products for us. What's the pros and cons of that? So that's where we want to go in the discussion. Jeff, you're in it right now with a big company. They carved out an area. So let's start there. Like, I don't know, Jeff, you're in it right now. Like, what are you seeing that's working? What is not working in a model that where they kind of carve out this separate area?
Yeah. So, I want to be struggling with the right word, but like, I don't want to just come in and shit all over the idea, right? Where I want to go with this approach is understanding, and we've talked about this a lot, understanding where your organization is at on their journey. And my gut tells me when I see something like this, that is an anti-pattern. If like, hey, you're creating an innovation center and saying, well, this is where we innovate. I don't see that's all that different than saying, this is our QA center and this is where we do all of the QA. Mm-hmm. You know, this is our cloud center and this is where we do all the cloud. You're really, kind of disconnecting something that should be more integral to your overall product development process and extracting it out over here, right? Now, that being said, though, if it's helping you move forward, great, let's go ahead and help you move forward, you know, baby steps in the right direction. So, and I think that's where the company that I'm at right now is at, is their maturity model is just a bit more on the early stages of this stuff. And in fact, I think you guys will get kind of a kick out of this, is the way they define innovation. And I don't mean this in like a jaded way when I was making that comment, is the organization's ability to predict, respond to, and adjust to change, right? Like, that's how they define innovation. Sure. And I would argue, well, that's just good old agile, right? And innovation is part of that. Just gut saying, like, hey, depending on where your organization is at, understand that it might not be great, but it's likely a step in the right direction. But the counterpoint to that is, well, that's the excuse to implement safe. And that generally doesn't turn out really well either. Mm-hmm. So let me kick it back over.
Well, I like the way you're thinking, because I'll share when I hear innovation department or innovation area, I have the same gut reaction. It's like, well, why would you have to carve out an area? Why don't you just strive for innovation inside your culture? But I do think there's a progress. Like, let's break it down into three categories. Category one, we're so terrible, we have zero innovation in our entire organization. Just, we don't do anything innovative, right? We just follow orders, complete command and control, staged approaches, big batch cycles, whatever. Next step somewhere in the middle is probably the innovation area or department, where an org is experimenting with good intentions And I think that's where, if we zoom out and like ignore our gut reactions, that's a cool step. And then the place I think any organization should and want to be is just embedded in our culture. Like, we don't even have to talk about we don't even have to use the word innovation anymore, because it doesn't bring us any value in conversation, because we're just doing it. Like, you are living and breathing and bleeding innovation inside your culture. So I think I agree. Like, I think it's so easy, because our default, at least mine in the world, is like, pick out the negative things. And then you have to like take a pause and say, well, but what's positive about that? And the positive thing is, it's a step in the right direction, hopefully, right? Like, same thing, apply it with any other specialty. We don't test anything. We just code in production. Okay, we have a QA department. Cool, now you're testing. And then we don't talk about testing anymore, because it's just part of software product development. Like, those three different areas. You can probably break all kinds of things down into rule of three.
Yeah, so I think the problem with it is there's always a handoff, just like there are in specialties, right? So anytime you have a handoff, that's usually a sign of delay. That's a sign of like, and not really being part of your culture. Like, you're setting up a structure that's seems good in, from the outside, but once you get into it, it's probably gonna have all kinds of problems. And so what might work better is an org within an org, where it's like, you are building a brand new product. We are a subsidiary of this company. We wanna reduce risk from the parent company that has something that's a cash cow or whatever else, and they don't wanna risk, you know, lawsuits where that would take that money or whatever it is. So we're gonna create a separate company over here, and we're gonna draw the walls. And then we're going to like have them focus on building new product, whatever it might be, or products, whatever you want it to be. That could work. But things I think you need to do is you need to be very, very conscious of the policies that you put in place instead of this new org. What I've seen happen in big organizations is they create this org, and then they put all the same policies that the parent company had. They go hire all the same leaders from over there. They just move some leaders over there. That's the only structure they've ever worked in, is these big companies. And they treat the small company like a big company, and no one actually does the work. like it's got all the dysfunction of the big company, because you just, without the cash cow, because you've never innovated through it. So you got to find the right people that are product centric, that have grown a product from scratch, that can, you know, move fast and break shit, like, you know, kind of like that, you know, kind of the stuff from Silicon Valley. Like, they got to understand what it means to do that. You got to bring people in that can help grow a product, you know, as it starts to scale. And I think it's a different type of skill set. And so maybe some people can switch and transition and leverage different skills, but some can't. I've seen one model where they went and hired all, you know, a subset of all the people that were in leadership from the parent company. And then they went and got contractors to do all the actual work. And then they told them exactly what to do and how to do it. And that failed pretty miserably. And I think it kind of goes back to the thing we've talked about in previous episodes, Jeff, where it's like, you know, you want to hire missionaries, not mercenaries. So it starts with a group of missionaries that really believe in some type of purpose that this smaller org within an org is going to accomplish. And you give them the freedom to be successful, and don't hold them back, right? Like, they don't give them small grounds of funding to try experiments, and then decide when you want to change directions, have these pivot and persevere moments often. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So and I like how you just ended that, because after the conversation with Josh, and this is why I really genuinely loved doing the podcast, is because I get to talk with really smart people, and then I would get something that I could directly apply into my work. But that is the driving factor, is those pivot, persevere, or kill decisions, right? That is our value prop now, is I think about it as discovery and delivery, but mm-hmm. the transition point is the first pivot, persevere, or kill discussion. And then we just kind of move into more of an iterative cycle of doing essentially the same thing. Now, I think the difference, and this may just be unique to the experimentation area that we're setting up, is we are looking at horizon 2 to 3 things, like high risk, high reward, but way out into the future. Mm-hmm. And so we are very explicit with the fact that anything we produce is not production ready. We are here to kick the tires and experiment with new things and take a look at what is the pros and cons of plugging these new technologies into existing products today. So ChatGPT as an example. Great. Like, what does that look like? What are some use cases where we could go and kick the tires on it and see, is this even worth putting on somebody's roadmap? And what is the value of what we would be able to get out of this integration? And it's you know, again, with the examples that we've used in the past, it's a controlled spend for us. Hey, we're going to invest $100,000 in this area. It's going to take us 3 months with our team. That's our capacity. And each month we're going to come back and show you the output or the learnings that we had from all of these, you know, value, viable, feasible, usable experiments that we're running specifically with defined outcomes that we're going after. So you go in, you do that discovery, and then every month we're just iterating and essentially we're having a sprint review, right? And we're showing the working stuff that we're working on. And every month the business is telling us, is this good? Is this bad? Should we keep going, right? Like it kind of just boils down to that. And we just go until either budget is done or we make a kill decision with the things that we're working on. So what do you think of Boobles?
So the thing I struggle with there is like, okay, so the thing we're trying to do is we're just saying feasibility. Can we even use an AI in any of our products? Okay, that's fine. Well, we can try that. So let's say we put a team of 8 people and they do an experiment and we build something, but we're like, you know what? We could have just like did this thing over here and there's a product off the shelf we could have bought and we could have paid $30,000 and had this thing, but we spend now a quarter of this team of 8 working on it. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. And now did we propagate that knowledge throughout the organization for that amount of money? We didn't. And we're going to throw all it away, but we learned something. Like if we don't use that right away, we know that those skills will start to deteriorate over time. And people may leave. Like the unfortunate matter is like in tech, like people switch jobs like crazy, right? Like I don't know what the exact number is, but it's 18 months to 2 years, somewhere in that range. People are switching jobs, right? So you do this and then people leave and then you don't have that capability. You just did a bunch and you trained somebody how to maybe use AI and do it in this one instant, but they're not going to be with your company in 2 years. So what did you gain from that? That's my struggle with it. So I think you have to find a practical use for, yeah, feasibility, but like, let's do something that could actually be used and could actually provide some value. Otherwise, what's the point, right? Like if you only have one piece of the puzzle, like I think it's going to be a lot of throwaway and I don't know if it's quite worth it. What are your thoughts?
So I hear everything that you're saying, and coupling that back with what we were just talking about before is like, where are you at organizationally on your journey? And if I don't want to create a false dichotomy, but I think it's almost true in the environment that we're in. You can either have no innovation or potential throwaway innovation. Which would you go with?
Sure. So I guess what I'd go back with is if it's feasibility, then that I'm trying to validate. That's let's be very explicit. Like I'm trying to prove out feasibility of using a chat, an AI. Like I want to use feasibility of an AI. Like that's our goal. And then like, can we bring people in like on some rotation so like multiple people get exposure to it? So like if that's your goal, like to learn a new capability and have this insight and think about where we could use it throughout the organization, that's like a policy or a structure I'd put in place so like we could try to get more and more people with the knowledge. But if we take a small group, teach them, and then they all leave over the next, you know, 2 years, we didn't really gain much. So I think like you could do it. It's just be very explicit about the outcome that you're trying to go after. And then like try to rally around that and try to create a way to like see if you're successful on that outcome, on the feasibility, right?
So let me elaborate just a little bit, because I think that is a problem that we are trying to solve. So think about our experimentation as a menu, right? And the mm-hmm. menu that we would bring out to our enterprise customers is basically 3 different menu items. And the first one that we've been discussing is turnkey experimentation. So I can't go into details, but there is one area where they are essentially creating a new product offering, okay? And they have their year one roadmap and they are rocking and rolling on it. And they just don't have the time to be investing into doing experimentation right now because they're critically focused on year one initiative and roadmap, right? So we would say, hey, you know what? You've got this thing over here. Maybe we want to go deeper into this market segment or actually want to try and expand it out a little bit. How about we do some just basic testing to see if our customers would even be interested in that offering in these mm-hmm. tangential markets, right? So great. Now we've got turnkey experimentation. That's kind of what we've been talking about thus far. We would bring that learnings back, et cetera, and they can make a decision about it, whether they would want to put it on their year two roadmap. But the second one is more about what you're thinking about, and that's the dojo model, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Hey, we want to do some immersive learning. We want to come in with our team, And we're going to set up some goals, some objectives that we're going to be working towards. We're going to go in there for a 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, whatever that time frame happens to be. And not only are we going to be delivering against product outcomes, we know what we want them to build, but this is an opportunity to upskill all of our team members on new tech, whether that's CI/CD, whether that's ChatGPT integration, whether that's agile mindsets, whatever. But we're going to get some synergies between an internal boot camp, if you will, where the work is directly targeted at these outcomes. So that's the second menu item. The third menu item is working with actual startups in the industry. So in for us, it's insurance. So InsurTech is the area. You know, there's a number of incubators that are out there, and they've got all these great ideas, but they specifically are looking to partner with big companies, like, you know, think Northwestern Mutual, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they come up with this great product idea or service idea, but they need the actual company to partner with them and start to integrate, right? That's where we would come in, is, hey, we would have the dedicated headcount in our area to actually build that integration bridge and start kicking the tires on this product offering. And then we can bring it to the rest of the business and say, here, we proved it out. We proved this work. We can integrate with this new startup, with their tech. And here's how we think we can apply it to the rest of your product areas, right? So that's kind of how our experimentation area breaks down from a service offering that we would provide to the rest of the org. So I agree with what you're saying. I think in one of those, there is the case for, well, we kind of lost that knowledge. It's just for our team. How do we get that out to the rest of the org? But I think that's just one of the three service offerings that we provide.
Sure. So maybe in the new era, you're not going to be so experimental with the technology because you're really just trying to figure out, like, do we have desirability and usability here? Like, you need to get that accomplished first. So let's use tech that we know works. Like, we've proven that before that we can do it. And then, like, we'll do the new feasibility stuff in an area like the accelerators or the dojo type model, where we're going to try to prove some things out and we're distributing that knowledge. I think that could work. Like, I think you just got to be very clear about what you're doing and what the outcome is that you're looking for, you know?
Yeah. So
I think it,
oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Byron.
Well, I was going to say, I think it all works. It's just what's your budget and time horizon. Like, I'm going to throw some project management triangle at us here. Like, you can do anything you want inside of an organization. If you want to, like, let's imagine an innovation department is something that you don't have internally, but you're going to go out and buy it from the market. So how much are you willing to pay to have someone validate feasibility for you? And if you have budget to do that, then by all means, go for it, right? It's probably going to take a little longer and it might cost you more. Startups on the other end of the spectrum, or right, a little bit to the left, in our 1-2-3 example earlier, they don't do that. They just start with an experimentational mindset and they test ideas. And so that's what they do, because they probably don't want to, like, it's a divide by zero error in their head. If you're like, hey, startup company, you don't have a lot of investment yet, you're trying to bring this thing to market, you should go hire a big consulting firm to validate feasibility for you. No, they're just going to do it. And because it's in their culture. So you can do either one. It's just one will probably cost more money and take longer to actually see the outcomes realized. That's my opinion on it. So again, it's not right or wrong, but it's just on a spectrum. One's probably going to cost more money.
So that's exactly where I was going. Excuse me. That's exactly where I was going with what you were just kind of alluding to at the beginning, what you were saying there, Chad. The vision that I've laid out for our area is, we are the internal McKinsey. We are the internal Deloitte, right? We view our enterprise customers as the customers we're here to serve. And it's crazy how often I refer back to the Centaire days, but our approach is treating it no different than we are responding to an RFP, an external RFP, right? We have an enterprise customer coming to us and they have a high level idea. Great. We're going to spend 2 to 3 weeks doing product discovery with them. We're going to interview our stakeholders, interview our customers, figure out what are the problems they're trying to solve, have defined outcomes that we're trying to achieve, defined metrics of success. We create a discovery document that we are then going to give back to our enterprise customers. Make sure we're all aligned. Hey, we spent a few weeks. Here's what we heard. Here's what we're going to be going after. Here's our first pivot, persevere, or kill decision point. And if we're all aligned that, yes, this is what we want out of this thing, here's our budget, here's our forecast, going to get back to your iron triangle comment, But like, are we talking 6 months or 6 years to have get something out of this, right? Like, let's make some good decisions at this point, and then we just go in and start monthly iterating on the same concept. So that's that's kind of the approach that I'm using here.
So instead of like just saying, hey, we're going to set these things up, like what if you actually created a statement of work between the organization and the innovation center? Like, this is what we agree to do. Here's our part in it. Here's your part in it. And we're going to do it by these state. And then if we have to change it, we have a, like, it's like almost like a negotiation back and forth. Like, well, this is what we said we were going to do. We're not going to be able to hit that. Do you want to continue? Do you not want to continue? This is where we're at. Like, I think that adds a ton of transparency and accountability of like where we're at. And then you don't get trapped into like, well, you know, we'll just go get a little extra money and we'll just go another month. You know, we'll go another 2 months. And like,
That's exactly it. It is the Sunter model, right? Like, all I'm just copying that.
Yeah, I think that's a great model. I think that helps a ton, right? Like, because you actually put a structure in place that drives transparency, accountability, decisions, right? Like, I think that's great. I think you have to have that. If you don't, I think you slip into the overspending and getting and not knowing when to stop. You know, like we get into the weeds so often as people that develop products. And it becomes your baby and you don't want to hear that it's ugly. And then like you realize it's not as good as you thought it was, right? When you put it out in the market or whatever. So having those checkpoints and, you know, that pressure can be a really good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Just going back to inspection and adaptation, right? Like that is what we are striving to do is getting those. I always articulate small, subtle, constant adjustments to the direction that we're going, right? Like I want to give our customers as many opportunities to say, no, this is not working out, or, oh, I want to go more left, or, oh, I want to go more right. So internally, we'll probably have more frequently, like weekly, you know, sprints, iterations, whatever. But with our customers, being respectful of their time, like trying to limit that to just probably once a month. But again, there's trust that we're going to build in there. Trust when we're going to actually show something that's working and trust that, okay, if we need to go left, we're going to be able to go left. Going back to their definition of innovation, right? The ability to respond to and adapt to change. So I think this gets us most of the way there. Yes, there's some dysfunction. Totally agreeing with what you were talking about earlier, Jeff. Like, can we make it even better? Awesome. I'm hoping options two, the dojo model, starts to solve some of those deeper issues. How do we start to disseminate innovation throughout the rest of the org versus having it contained within our innovation center and potentially leaving when we've got natural churn in the org?
Mm-hmm. I think also, like, not to turn this into a metrics conversation, but some things that you could look at down the road and everyone could look at is like, how long and how much money does it cost during this innovation cycle? Once we are presented with a feasibility, you know, case that we review, how many of those do we act on versus say no to? And when we do choose to act on it, how long does the decision take from when you've presented something to try in the market and we've actually go and start working against it, right? Like, just like we always are saying, if you're a product owner on a Scrum team and you don't know how much your team costs per sprint, you're probably not making the best decisions you could be because you're missing that real dollars component to your decision process, right? And owners just do this by default. If you are a real owner and you happen to be using Scrum, you're going to know how much the team costs, right? Every iteration. So I think there's an opportunity to just lean that out or at least just bring awareness to it so that you don't fall into the trap of this innovation area, and I'm not really speaking for your, but in anybody who has an innovation area, you don't fall into that trap of leaning way more on the analysis mindset instead of the feedback mindset where we iterate as quick as possible through discovery, you know, phase, for lack of a better word, and then we act on it, right? I think it's the time and the money component again that just you have to pay attention to. Or if you have a lot of money to spend on it and it's just a little blip in your product, in your P&L, then just, I guess, do whatever you want, right?
Yeah, the metric side has been difficult in particular. It talked a little bit about this in the past, so I don't want to rehash the whole thing. But the trickier part is, because we are deliberately saying this is not going to go into production, like, it's hard to measure the outcomes of that. Our North Star aspirational metric that we would ideally like to go for would be something like the overall success rate of newly launched products after 6 month mark, right? Like, we would want things that have come through the innovation to essentially have the risk flushed out. Like, these are, I don't want to say sure things, but like, we've done the vetting, and these things that are coming out through us should have a higher success rate after 6 months versus baseline features or products that we're putting out into the market. But even that, the problem is that lagging tail of, okay, now we're talking 2.5 years before we would get that metric. And that's even if we decided not to kill the thing, which is a very valid decision that we might come to throughout our innovation work. So,
yep.
Which unfortunately kind of leads us to more throughput. But going back to what Josh had recommended, and I think this is right, is just, I think it is the consistency of the pivot, persevere, or kill decisions. Like, ours should be something like, with 95% predictability, that, because that's how often we hit our monthly target of presenting these options to the business with objective learnings to help you make a decision.
I like that. It's like, well, here are the hands you can play, basically, is what you're telling the parent company. So I'm going to go ahead and do some analysis on the hand and say, okay, they're playing Texas Hold'em. You got two aces here, right? Like, you should win this hand 70% of the time. I don't know what the exact odds are on that, but like, let's just say that's what it is. Do you want to take that bet? They should take that bet, right? Like, they should be more than happy to take a 70% chance that they're going to win. Cool. Okay. You got, a queen 10 offsuit. Like, I don't know. Like, it's maybe 50-50 at this point. Do you want to take that bet? You know, and like, they can make the decision on all the other options that they have or whether they do that. The outcome isn't necessarily what you want to maybe judge yourself on. You just gave them the information to make the decision. So then, as long as you're the information you're giving, I guess, on the options, and you're giving them the options, maybe that is the thing you measure yourself against. And because it's the closest thing you can get to, especially from a real-time feedback standpoint. And yeah, do you want to get higher odds? Because then there more things are going to happen? Maybe, but like, I don't know. I think like anytime you have some type of, it can even be small, like small micro incentives for the people on the teams. Like, I'm just going back to the Centerra model. Like, we had little bonuses every quarter if we hit certain level of like profitability, and you could see where we were trending to. And man, like, I don't know. I'm just one that takes ownership, I guess. And I was always like, what can I do? We're behind this month. Like, I know I'm already like at 100% capacity, but like, what else can I do? And like, I'd be asking other people for help. I'd be asking our directors for help. Like, what can I do? Can I go on a sales call? Can I do this? Can I help with this project? Like, someone's on vacation. Do you want me to step into there and help them? Like, and I don't know, would I have done that if I wasn't getting the bonus? I don't know. Probably, maybe, I don't know. But like, I definitely felt the ownership to like reach out and be very, very proactive because of that. So, cause there was some kind of, everybody got that bonus. It wasn't just me. Like, I had felt some like, I can take ownership and help everybody else get something too. So I think that's a key part of it, like that shared ownership, especially when you're in an innovation area. Like, you should know when you're successful and you should be rewarded for that. Like, just if that's presenting options with confidence intervals, great. Like, I think that's what you reward people for. See what comes next, you know? Like, maybe you'll run into some other problem, but at least you've started down probably a good direction. What do you do if you get a startup? Let's just say you're a big organization and you're like, oh, cool, there's a startup. I think we can leverage this and we're both going to be more successful if you get to use our sales team and our XYZ, you know, that we have here at this company. But you created a pretty good product. You don't have that. We can leverage these things together, these synergies. What would be some of like the biggest mistakes a big company could make there? Or what are the things that would drive success, do you think, in a model like that?
That's the one that I am least educated on speaking to, because we haven't yet set this up. So we have done work with generators that are out there. But the problem has always been, at least with the organization I'm with today, is they go out, they do this vetting process. They say, oh, okay, we've got these 10 different startups that have interesting ideas. We go through something of a vetting process. We find out which we think are the most interesting or the biggest return on investment. Select it down to maybe one or two, but then that's where it falls kind of flat, because the org isn't good about carving out space to actually try and integrate with these things, because They've already got their roadmaps and they're already focused on getting the things out the door today without necessarily making time for the other things, right? Very, very typical, almost feature factory type of thing. And so that is where this other service offering would be, because in the Innovation Center, it's dedicated headcount, it's dedicated funding. These business unit workstream areas, whatever you want to call them, don't necessarily have to worry about that affecting their budgeting decisions. It's, oh, great, that's why we have an Innovation Center. So we select the startup, select the technology, figure out what the outcome is going to be, and then we're just forming a partnership there of actually doing the feasibility test, doing the usability test, in essence, integrating with the vendor partner, or and that's not exactly the right word, the startup partner, and then doing the research of, okay, this is what it was like to integrate. Here were the landmines that we stepped onto. Here's the test cases that we were able to validate. Here we think the larger ROI decisions, and essentially bringing that over to our business leaders and saying, all right, here's what our research of findings was. Here's our recommendation for your area. We don't really have any control over it at that point. We're just doing the actual research and integration with these startup partners. So I don't even know if that's
Do the startup partners have any revenue?
I don't know. I would imagine they, well, yeah, I don't know how that necessarily that works. That's always been the side of startup that I don't know, like the money side, right? Like where everybody, to me, like I know they get investors some way, shape or form, but I don't know if in that state, are they standalone financially solvable? Or I don't even know if that's the right term. Like, are they profitable?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean,
go ahead, Chad.
Well, you're making me think, maybe this is going to go off to a little tangent topic, but you're making me think of even when you said like vendor partner, how so many organizations, right, they want to, instead of buy or instead of purely build, they do buy and build. We're going to do a lot of in-house development, but we're going to work with three vendors to integrate with our product that we're working towards, right? And every one of those vendors, of course, in 2023 and beyond say, hey, we're agile. You should work with us. We do sprints. And then pretty soon you find out all those vendors lied to you, or maybe they didn't lie, but they don't know what they don't know. So no, they're nowhere near something most people would call agile. They are literally just doing sprints and they have a waterfall process. So then everything blows up. Statements of work are written with time and scope, and then leadership gets involved and they start arguing with the vendors. And a lot of times millions of dollars go down the drain and the product doesn't ever launch, right? I mean, I think collectively, but just the three of us in this room have seen that over and over again. So you made me think about like what you're trying to do in this vetting process. It's a good thing to be looking at, right? Like, okay, we're going to help this startup. Essentially, what I heard you describe is like, you're looking for landmines. You're trying to anticipate the impediments, right? Obviously, there's viability with the startup product, the idea in general. But if you're like the idea and you want to move forward, you're sort of going through this like, will this actually work in working with this startup partner? And I think that's a good thing. Like, the more you can do that and even maybe put in an experimentational, like a trial run, like let's try something with this partner and see what happens, right? It's just like there's no replacement for going and doing something. You can watch somebody ride a bicycle when you're a kid over and over again, but until you actually swing your leg over and start to try to learn to ride the bike, you're not experiencing it yet and you don't understand what you're going to encounter, right? So I don't know.
Imagine
the intentions are great.
Imagine a world, I'm going to riff on Chad's, like where like you have, let's just say, two or three people, they come in as a team and they partner with a startup. Like, we're considering working with you. Here's what we're going to do. We will give you three people that are come in and be on your teams and work with you. We're going to do this for one quarter. They're going to help you deliver. We're going to look at your financials. We're going to try to hit some target. And then we're going to come back and evaluate if we want to move forward together as a partner. Like what they should be looking for is like, hey, what does this code look like? Like, is this thing viable? Maybe we have somebody that's more on the product market fit, that's more on the product sector, that can like look at like, hey, is this viable? What can we leverage inside of our organization to make, you know, because we're really good at this. They're not very good at this. we could, you know, do this, we could do this for them, but we're not good at this thing that they're great at. So like, this is a good partnership, or you know what, really, we should just part ways. It's a small investment. It's like whatever you're going to pay, like $100,000 in salaries. The startup gets something because they get free labor and they get some, you know, people working with them. And I think it could be a win-win. And then you decide if you want to pivot or persevere. I think that small gates, though, like we were talking about, is something to be thinking about. I think if I was in like a big company's shoes and I'm looking for these startups, I'm looking for companies that are making money, that have revenue, but aren't profitable yet. And like, we have some things that we can leverage because of our strengths that can make them very profitable potentially. Cause like, we're probably not very good at like developing and testing really, really fast. Like that's most bigger companies aren't good at that. They probably are because they're a startup and they have to. So I don't want to kill that, their strength, but I want to leverage what our strength is. You know, I want to give them the strength of a big company without killing the innovation of, which is the strength of a startup, you know? And so I look for ways to do that.
Yeah. So all the things that you two are articulating far better than I did, like that's the spirit of what we're going after, right? We're in the dating phase before we decide to tie the knot with this startup, right? And so we're looking for, all right, are they OCD? Are they a germaphobe? You know, do they like cats, right? Like figuring out all those little details before we decide whether or not it's worth fully investing and moving forward with.
Yeah. You know, it's obviously the house analogies are overdone in every topic area of the world, but I was just thinking, like, what is another large investment you make, right? Besides investing in a startup or a company, what's another large investment most of us make? Buying a house. Okay. Now, when the market's good and houses are scarce, there are a lot of, like, just a few years back here now, not even a year ago, there were houses being bought unseen. You didn't walk through the inside of the interior of the house. You literally would buy it off of a listing, right? Just a photo. So I think this is that next step. It's basically, I'm going to kick the tires. I'm going to walk inside this house, right? You go like we typically do when we buy a house. You schedule something with a realtor, you walk in the house and you look around. Is this going to work with my lifestyle? Will my large sectional couch fit in this living room? Like integration issues, essentially, right? You're validating that by going and experiencing it inside. And I think that's what we're sort of dancing around here. It's like, why wouldn't you want to do the same before you invest in it? Like, if you're just a venture capitalist and you just want to take the bet, you're basically buying houses unseen, probably, right? You get financial statements, but you don't know what's going on inside the company, really, right? And that's why a lot of times they don't go so well. You buy an idea, and the people executing against it, it just doesn't work out, right? Maybe the culture's not there, maybe the expertise isn't there. So anyway, that's what I was thinking of, is I was like, well, what's another big investment? It's like, yeah, we don't buy houses typically unseen. We want to go and walk through. Even a step further, that when I was looking at houses, people always gave me advice, talk to the neighbors, find out what the neighborhood is around your house. What's the reputation, right? Like, you know, you find out more about the house you're about to buy by talking to neighbors instead of the realtor trying to actually get you to just make a decision. So anyway.
Yeah. And I think all that is also part of the vetting process up front, right? But, you know, when we're still looking at maybe 10 of these startups, right? That's some of the legwork that we're going to be performing, is going and asking the neighbors, taking a look at what, you know, the websites that they've got out there, maybe even doing a code sample, right? Like, we don't have to wait until, you know, we're down to the three or whatever. There's probably some red flags that we can filter some of those up through our funnel, if you will. So,
yep. Awesome. I'm happy I got to work an analogy in. That's if I can work one analogy in per episode, then I will feel like complete.
Yeah, and I'll keep going with the analogy, because I was thinking about the idea of like, could you rent the house before you buy it? And that's maybe what we're talking about, like, to continue the analogy, like renting it for a few months lets you know if you should buy it, right? You're going to see, like, what kind of problems do you have? Does it flood when it rains, like in the basement or whatever it might be? Like, there's certain things you can't learn unless you're there, unless you live it, you do it, you know? Airplanes fly right over your house in the middle of the night, and that's just a non-starter for you, right? Like, whatever it might be in this analogy, you're going to learn a lot by doing it. And I think too often companies get into a pre-analysis where let's do all the analysis up front instead of a post-analysis of like, let's analyze what happened, you know, and then like decide how we want to move forward. So by renting, you can actually see what happened today and then be like, well, do we want to move forward in the future? And you have a way to get out, right? You have a structured, you know, pivot or persevere moment, you know, when you decide to buy, continue renting, whatever you decide you want to do.
You know, I love that. And like, just think about the real estate industry being disrupted by something like that. Like, okay, initially, I just would throw the idea away. Like, who's going to let you rent, you know, come and stay in a house that you're thinking about buying for an extended period of time? But what if there was an incentive? What if some company comes up sort of like an Airbnb style where it's like, we're going to be a broker to give you an upper hand in selling your house, right? Because Airbnb is all on reputation. Nobody wants to buy a house and get screwed over in the deal and then end up, oh, wow, this furnace is, or, you know, whatever. The hot water heater leaks, but they hid that from us. And like, you know, in reality, we're all supposed to disclose everything before you sell a large asset like a home. But we know it doesn't always go that way, obviously, right? So maybe not obviously, unfortunately. So wouldn't that be cool, though? If there was like a broker service that sort of had certain home sales rise above and say, we're willing to let you come and stay in our house for a week, right? I mean, obviously there'd have to be a lot of trust level, like review systems so your house doesn't get trashed or whatever. But like, people are already doing this when they rent a property. What if they take it a step further in the future? You know, it's one of those, I think it's one of those disruptors that's leaning more towards, again, like the premise of crypto, right? More trust in the transaction. Trust and reputation. So anyway, you got me excited, Jeff, when you talked about that idea. Because I was thinking about it like, well, yeah, you don't get to actually test drive the house, but then you just took it a step further and now I'm all excited. Somebody should go build that as a product and disrupt
and let us know how it turns out. But
yeah, I don't want to take the risk, but you should go do it. Someone else.
Totally. But I think, Jeff, this is what you were getting to, but that is one of our menu items, right? Mm-hmm. It is come rent the property for a few months. And at the end, we're going to do some research and give you the highs and the lows of what it's like to live in this property and then help you make an educated decision about whether you want to pull the trigger on actually buying mm-hmm. the property at that point. Because when we're working with the startups, it is a working agreement to figure something out. We haven't yet pulled the trigger to completely go all in with them at this point.
Awesome.
Like it.
Good chat, guys.
Good. We good to wrap this up?
I think so.
This is fun. Okay.
Awesome. Then like, fuck it. I'm out.
Hopefully you enjoy this outro of Jeff and Jeff over the years.
And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. All right, and we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. All right, and we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. All right, and we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, go ahead and kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we're recording. All right, Jeff, kick it off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. All right, and we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. And we are recording. All right, Mr. Boobles, kick us off, man. How'd you want to start off, Mr. Boobles?
Thank you for listening to the Agile Wire. We are consistently inspecting and adapting ourselves. We would appreciate feedback at feedback@theagilewire.com or on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play Store. See you next time.